How's it going, Pod Goblins? Welcome back to another episode of D20 Tower. My name's Brandon, and I've been writing fantasy and studying improv since I was a kid.
My name's Liam, and I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I could walk. And now we are going to walk you through our DMing journeys to share the tips, tricks, and stories we've picked up along the way. We want all your games to be fun and engaging for everyone at the table.
So prep your adventuring gear,
grab your dice,
and roll initiative.
Let's begin.
Oh, yeah?
I can't. Why?
Get dunked. You all lost.
I wanted not to laugh at that.
That was okay. Well, welcome to D20 Tower, everybody. That was Dylan throwing out a yeah for everybody.
We just wanted him to speak in a higher tone today, and that's how he started it.
Vocal exercises gone wrong. Gone right?
It depends on whether or not you're engaging your pelvic floor.
You're probably is that with engaging or, your pelvic floor when making that sound.
Is that with or without a plug?
Well, that's going to change everything. Oh my God. Okay, now we're just like...
All right.
I'd rather talk about illithid analogy or anatomy.
Nah.
You're wanting to talk about illithid anatomy? You're trying to get into tentacle porn? Dude, we are opening an episode.
I mean, look how you opened it. You might as well.
I gave you my fries, you go straight to tentacles.
Look how you opened it. I didn't open it like that.
Yeah, I definitely did not tell you.
This was highly requested.
By him.
You literally just did it. Okay, whatever.
So what do you guys think of clerics?
Busted.
Why? I mean, like, yeah, they can get, like, resurrection and stuff, but, like...
Just how you can meta their kit and pick spells specifically to make it so that not only is it impossible to actually get a hit on you or hurt you, but then they're dealing damage around you and they're healing. And even if you do hit them, they have
health. Hold on. Okay.
Health.
I'll give you a couple examples. They get the best buff spell at level one.
Guidance.
Bless.
Oh, bless. Yeah.
Bless is mathematically like the best buff spell in the game, period.
Does it scale?
You add more people.
Oh, cool. It's what, 1d4?
Yeah, it's 1d4 per roll. So that's busted. Let's start there. And then you can do that and other things. Mm-hmm. But let's go. You want to be a tank?
Yeah.
Okay. You take a life cleric.
Okay.
So you can heal everyone. Mm-hmm. You put on heavy armor, a shield, and you can... run around with a dildo in the other hand for all I care. Like, it doesn't matter what you put in the other hand, because we're never going to do anything with a weapon.
Okay.
You have an arcane focus of some kind. You run around with a little ankh, right? It's like, very classic.
I dig it.
You run up. You have your shield in your hand. You have your now 21 AC, 20 AC, whatever it is. And...
yeah, it sounds like Pathfinder.
You go, I'm going to cast Sanctuary on myself. Okay. So if something wants to make an attack against me, they have to first make a wisdom saving throw... against my spell save DC to even be able to make the attack roll. I'm also going to dodge. So now if they do attack me, they have to beat a 20 with disadvantage.
Okay.
And then if they hurt me, I have pretty good health because I'm a life cleric. And then I can heal myself by healing other people. And then if I want to get to a good enough level here, I can do all of this and become a meat grinder all at the same time, because you can cast Sanctuary on yourself, have plate mail on, have your shield up, and have Spirit Guardians up that does 48 plus damage depending on what level you cast it at. And that doesn't prevent them, that doesn't turn off Sanctuary. So you can just be like, I'm going to dodge, I'm going to run up, I'm going to have Sanctuary on me, and I'm going to do 48 damage to everything around me. And by the way, if anyone gets hurt, let me know. I'll heal you to fucking full and then some, because I'm a life cleric. And that's just the life cleric. Oh, you want to do those things, but you don't want to blast things to death?
Yeah.
Light cleric, you get flame spells. You get fireball.
It wouldn't the
storm
best
cleric,
thing,
you get lightning
what's
bolt.
The, what's the radiant cantrip? Sacred flame?
Sacred flame?
Yeah. I mean, that's great. What, like, nothing resists it's, radiant damage?
Okay.
Few things.
I don't like cantrips that are a saving throw.
Yeah, same. Like poison spray.
They never have the opportunity to crit. And that's like, it just feels kind of bad. Yeah. Also, it feels bad when you are like, I'm going to cast this spell. And the DM goes, it failed. And you're like, okay. Versus like, I cast this spell, I rolled. Oh shit, I rolled a 2. Okay, I'm going to move on with my my bad self over here. Like it, when the onus is on you, it just feels better. I understand the use for saving throws. I really do. I think that it would be a lot better for like area effect exclusively, but, or like things like intelligent saving throws for like psychic damage. There are cases where it comes into play, but especially for cantrips, I just feel like it would,
so best it would feel armor better. Class, best cantrip.
Not best armor class, but pretty good.
They get heavy?
Class. Yeah, but they're not likely to. The life cleric gets heavy. Everything else gets medium.
Unless you're a dwarf.
There's probably other, well, yeah.
War
but we're talking about.
War cleric probably.
No, I think
heavy.
They, no, I'm pretty sure they just get medium. It's like surprising.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because I looked that way too. There's not many of them that, I think there's two, maybe something like that, but it's less than you'd think. Because you think of a priest running around in heavy armor because it's kind of a classic thing now.
Yeah, it's
but
D&D
it is, it is very just for a few of them. Like it's reserved for just a few of the subclasses now. For the most part, they just get medium armor. Now they run around in chainmail or half plate. Because half plate is medium armor.
Yeah. So we like them? Is that?
I mean, it's a good. It's always a good.
Oh, you
want to
be. You
want to
be.
Have.
You want to be a.
It's always a good class.
You want to be in a sneaky group.
Yeah,
can do that too. Oh, you want to be like the charismatic one. It's gonna be a little harder, but you can do that too. Do you want to like? You can fill every niche role in a party by focusing on one type of cleric, and then if you just want to be a generalist, you can do that too and be. Wildly,
it's nice being able to change your spells every day,
yeah.
too.
It's nice when you can cast heroism and bless on your group, and everybody is now immune to fear, got extra hit points, and got a +4 on all their attack rolls and saving throws. Like, you become superhuman at low levels. Like, a +4 is like having, compared to when you are level 1. If you're taking standard stuff, like maybe you have a +5 to hit because you have a +3 in your main stat and a +2 in your proficiency bonus, having a +4 to that is like going up to level 8 and having a +2 weapon at the same time. Like, that's insane. That is a huge boost, and that's 5 to 20% extra on top of whatever you've got. So
probably the biggest drawbacks they have nothing to do with their actual combat mechanics and their spell usage. It has everything to do with role playing.
Hold on. That's the other side. Spell usage. Sorry. They're not like wizards. They can just be like, oh, I want to be better at something else tomorrow. I'll take a whole other spell set and just be good at other things tomorrow. Versus, oh, the wizard, let me go learn those spells and seek them out. Or like the sorcerer, which goes, change spells. I mean, I could, like, in a couple levels, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, so.
And then Warlock, which.
Two spells.
I,
the end.
So it looks like based on the playtest material, that they're taking Eldritch Blast off of the spell lists. So this has been requested for a long time. It looks like it sounds like if that's what they're doing, it'll become a class feature. So you don't have to sync one of, if you have to sync one of your optional cantrips, into something that you need to be your class, why don't they just give you that thing?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, also, they don't have to waste Eldritch invocations improving it.
They're still going to do that. Guarantee it. If it's a core class feature, it's here. This is how you modify your core class feature, rather than hey, here's how you modify one of the optional cantrips that you could choose if you wanted to. And then, so it sounds like people have been talking about ways to make the Warlock better for a long time. And the first starting point is just, hey, don't let Eldritch Blast be optional because it's not.
I feel like I'd like it better if they just had it enhance separately and just make Eldritch Invocations do whatever it does already. All of the different things you can get with them because there's a decent amount of options.
My quick solve in all of my campaigns, and this is not the best solve in the world, but in the Warlock class, I tell people if you are playing a Warlock and you see the word Eldritch Blast for a class feature of any type, change that to cantrip. And then it allows you to kind of build a little bit more freely because I know everyone says that Eldritch Blast is significantly better than all the other cantrips. Yeah. How is it, other than its force damage and not fire damage, how is it actually better than Firebolt? It can target multiple creatures. The way D&D is designed, that's the wrong way to approach combat. Like they've made it very clear that the best way to approach combat is focus fire, bring one thing down, focus fire, bring the next thing down. So you spreading out your attacks is really like, okay, you're cleaning up minions or fodder or something. Mm-hmm. So that it's fine, but like that doesn't make it significantly stronger. That it is force damage over fire damage does make it stronger. Fire damage is frequently resisted. So I'll give it that. It's better because it's got force damage. And it's better because it can add your charisma modifier or push or pull. Well, if you just changed your Eldritch Invocations from Eldritch Blast to Cantrip, all of them could add your charisma modifier or push or pull or do something. And it would be cool if then you had other things that like synergized with that a little bit better. Like if you had a Ray of Frost and you could push people with it and you had advantage at pushing them, or you could push them a little further because you slick the ground with ice underneath them. Mm-hmm. Like that would make that a lot cooler than just,
well, they have,
you push people a little bit because you go pew, pew, pew. Like, I don't know.
A cantrip for pushing gust.
Oh, there is. But the idea behind Eldritch Blast is you can get invocations that like you can push someone once a turn with it, or you can pull somebody closer to you once a turn with it, or you can like do a couple. I think you can make maybe there's one that lets you fear them, something like that. But the whole point is those modify Eldritch Blast, and if they all modified any cantrip, then you could build however you wanted. My argument also for why I actually prefer Firebolt over Eldritch Blast, and this is going to be controversial.
It can light things on fire.
No, because this can be controversial to a lot of people. I would rather just roll the one die to see if I hit. If I've got three or four Eldritch Blast beams, you have to roll four times. Your likelihood of hitting on all of them is lower than just hitting one, right? So I'd rather just say, hey, if I get 4d10 force damage in four different beams or 4d10 fire damage in one beam, personally, the way that I play, I'd rather do that. Also, like, I know that people like to roll dice, but I run for six people and I'd rather roll as few dice as needed on my turn to get my point across, to do the thing I'm trying to do so that we can like keep combat moving. And it's just like, oh, I'm going to attack this guy, that guy, and the boss. They all have different ACs. Here are my rolls in order. That one, hit or miss. 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 Like that, saying that was annoying. Listening to that at the table every round of combat.
Yeah, especially because it would be every round.
Yep. Well, and it's like the ranger and the fighter can do these things with multi-attack. The fighter's almost always doing it to one target. Almost always. Or they're like splitting between the target I just killed.
Or something.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So it's just the idea that it is significantly better because it is multiple beams, I just don't subscribe to that belief at all. That's all I'm really saying.
I mean, I don't think that's an unreasonable adjustment to make. I feel as if as long as the player, like, it's a consent thing. It's like, hey, would you rather run things like this Or would you rather run them like this? As long as you're like, as long as we're both on the same page about how we're going to do this.
Well, my rule doesn't really change anything for a player that just wants to use Eldritch Blast.
I mean, it's fair.
They just apply everything to Eldritch Blast.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know. I think that it would be a cool Eldritch Invocation in there that would make me feel better about all of this, that maybe made your Eldritch Blast, like, you could choose to flavor it with an elemental power. So instead of force damage, you could be like,
ice.
I want to do ice damage this round with it. Oh. Like, that would be cool to me because I personally understand it, but I don't like the idea of I am always just doing force damage. It's just like thump, 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 thump. It's... That's old to me and tiring after like a couple of combats.
They also just limit what the class can like do.
Yeah. And it's also just weird how they built it that like one subclass is so different from every other subclass that it should just be its own thing. The Hexblade is in every way built in opposition to the rest of the class. I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's like one of my favorite classes in the game. I have played, I think, 3 of them, and I haven't played many characters. So it's always a multi-class, though.
Isn't it also that way with the, I can't remember the name of the subclass, but the one where you take a Celestial?
Yeah, I think it is the Celestial Warlock. It is different in that it gets access to divine spells and that it gets this cool healing pool. Like it gets hit points it can heal with or D6s it can heal with, which is a little weak in my opinion that late game. But it is not different in that it still acts in every way like a warlock.
So if you're not healing, you're Eldritch Blasting.
You're still saving your 2 spell slots. You're using your pool to heal when needed. But like, you're still just a warlock acting like a warlock. With a Hexblade, you're like, I'll use my spells when I need them, maybe Armor of Agathys or something to help me in melee, but I'm going to wade in and I'm going to punch things in the face with this longsword because it's always a longsword for some reason. But like,
they should get Bless. There's that. At least I assume you'd get Bless.
Yeah, no. Anything that gets Bless is obviously a little better to start with just because that's such a good spell. For concentration, but it's also not the best spell. And you know,
it works until it doesn't.
I disagree with this concept I've heard on YouTube that it is exclusively always the best spell. I think you're just playing spreadsheets the game instead of actually playing D&D. I could think up so many times when Bless would not be the most useful thing. How about during a chase? Anyway, I'm just going to get salty because I got into an argument on
online about this. Actually, just because I was actually curious how many of the cleric domains get heavy armor proficiency, and it's like half.
Oh, it is like half of them?
Yeah, it's, okay.
It started off with not that many.
Forge, Grave, Life, Light, Order, Peace, Tempest, or not Peace, Order, Tempest, Twilight and War.
I wonder how much of that's new. How many of those are from the PHB? Because I feel like in the PHB it was not that many.
Player's Handbook.
I've not played a cleric ever, and I was only looking at. I was in my head only counting PHB. So if there's like one or two,
Light, Life, Tempest, and War.
Jesus, there's still 4.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
And some of those even get martial weapon proficiency on top of that.
Yep, but I mean, you don't need martial weapon proficiency. Oh, the other side of it is like there's. Oh, I don't think you can do Sanctuary and
Sacred or Protectors.
Hold on. Spirit Guardians? Yeah, I think they're both Concentration. You can do, I think, Spiritual Weapon without Concentration. If you want to go damage-y in melee, you can go like War Cleric or something, whatever you want, really. And you take, make sure you get the heavy armor. You go in melee. You attack with your weapon. You have Spirit Guardians up and you have Spiritual Weapon up, and that takes your bonus action. Spirit Guardians does damage at the beginning of their turn automatically, and you're making your attacks. It's a nice little tasty damage boost.
Yeah, a lot of them can get pretty crunchy. You can just
the idea of running around throwing fireballs as a light cleric in heavy armor, though, it feels very wrong to me.
So like, what if I roleplayed it well?
I mean, I don't really care if you roleplayed. It's in the rules. You're allowed to do it.
So That, well, that's, and that's what I brought up earlier. I think the only thing anybody can consider a drawback for them is really in role playing, because you're talking about role playing something that is a part of a church. I mean, I guess if that's how you're going
to be part of a church to be a cleric.
No, but you usually still have a faith and beliefs that kind of influence you as a character.
Yeah, but
so it's like,
everybody does. Like, you can just have some, like, total history nerd is a cleric.
You know what
just,
I think
goes into runes and just like, oh, these are cool.
I don't think that it's ever going to be common. I don't think it's going to be, like, I wouldn't necessarily recommend people do this because it is a lot if you're not just into it already. But my dad would always tell me about this dude that he played with that played a gnome cleric. And his god, because they were playing in Faerun, was Garl Glittergold, the gnome god. And the player knew all of the lore there was about Garl Glittergold and would spit it out mid-adventure all the time. Just like apply a Garl Glittergold thing to whatever they were doing. And I would love to just see that once. Like somebody that just like gets into their their god lore so much that they learn it and they're like, I can pull it and talk about it. That would be funny.
I'd just be like, the Lord works in mysterious ways.
So the last cleric I have seen in one of my games. Actually, no, we had Raznir. That was cool. He was a lightning priest. And
was he Tempest?
He was a shitty wizard.
Yeah, he went Tempest cleric.
Anytime
he
got hit, he'd just run away.
Yeah, he did not have a lot of hit points, wanted to be a frontline fighter. It didn't really go super well. And then he ended up leaving the game because of just, like, work life and everything.
Oh, my gosh, like, that was the wildest. Like,
that was an awkward moment. But
because I was still kind of newish at that point.
It was, like, two or three sessions in for you.
And, I've never seen a role-play encounter like this.
So awkward.
You know,
he knows. He knows that this. Like, we've actually had this conversation. I asked him if he still wanted to keep playing after this because it was so awkward and weird and uncomfortable for everyone at the table. But it wasn't that he was doing anything wrong. It's that he just wasn't engaging with anything. We did this whole role play where he meditated to speak to his god, and his god like pulled him into this like dream world and spoke with him, and he basically just sat there staring at the floor. And yeah, he found out that his god that he worshipped was like, I don't know why you worship me when you are the child of this other god.
Yeah, there was a huge,
it was a big reveal and everything.
Oh, and he was so blank. It was like you just turned off muted his brain and he's just sitting there like.
But he was having a real bad time handling life at that point. Yeah. So it is what it is. He's doing a lot better now, and I'm happy for him. He's not playing with us, unfortunately, but he's going to play some one-shots. Like, I've been talking about... So I've been... For everybody listening at home, everybody in the room already knows this. I won't shut up about it. I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV recently, the MMO, which is fantastic, but...
Yo, this nerd here is on Hero Forge trying to make Final Fantasy characters.
Okay, no, so I'm going to get there. Hold on. we're totally going to get there, and I'm actually going to use this as a DM tip. I'm going to be building a like game world and set up for... Or like based on Final Fantasy, because I've been playing them as long as I can remember. It was called 2 and 3 in the United States, which were 4 and 6 in Japan. But I started on 2 and 3, and then I played 7, 9, 10, 10, 2, 12, and now 14. I have played 15. I didn't want to play the 13 games. But I've been like, and 6 was one of my favorite games of all time. So I'm building this world around it, and it's been a lot of fun. But I forgot the point I was going to make because you threw me off, but I will get to, I was.
So like the classes that Liam wants to build for this, he wants a really small person to be able to carry a really big sword. That's one class.
Yeah, and totally.
Another,
yeah,
and has a gun in it. And then there's another one that's like,
wait, what's with the small person?
A girl witch with a really cute familiar.
I hate you.
And then another class is going to be somebody who jumps really high and goes, yeah.
That's literally Dylan right now.
Yeah, I know.
Except I don't use you a
get,
lance.
You get that. You get that. No, but you do a big axe now.
It's true. It is true.
A overly sized axe, like an anime sized axe.
I mean, were they described as being that long? Yes. I mean, they're great axes.
Yes, so. Yeah. They were wielded by a 13-foot tall were-shark.
Oh man!
Yes, they're huge.
Oh, don't worry. I'm really excited for the Tyrannosaurus.
The Tyrannosaurus Rex.
So his axe is called the Tyrannosaurus Rex,
which is from Griffin Saddlebag. Check him out on Instagram. Check him out on their website. Get their books. Get their cards. Whatever.
Their books so good. Are awesome. I know we talked a lot about Nord Games, but
we'll
like,
get to. Oh my gosh! I need to get Griffin Saddlebag too.
Oh, they released another one.
Oh yeah, and we will review them. Don't worry.
Like it was one of the few books of late that Liam hands this to me, and he's just like, "Hey, just read through this." And I'm just sitting reading the descriptions of these items, and they just sound so unique.
Also, he started on Instagram, I think, or the whole thing started with art. Yeah. He's an artist first. And wow, the art for all of the items is just so good. Yeah. Actually, so side note, and I hope somebody ever hears this that matters in what I'm going to say. So I just took a survey for Hero Forge, and they were like, do you ever want us to work in, do you ever want us to make, get licensed content and make it for our website? That's the kind of licensed content I want.
Yeah.
I would, that'd be cool. I'd love to see Griffin Saddlebag's items wearable and usable by my like custom NPCs so cool. at the yeah. table. Oh, that'd be sick. I'd be so happy. Oh man. Anyway, so you were making fun of me for being a nerd for making stuff on Hero Forge. So yeah. In this Final Fantasy world, I'm also working on building all of my factions and important NPCs right now that I know are going to just be like big in the story kind of no matter what, because they're just the important players. And one of the things that I like to do, because I see other people do it all the time and it's kind of cool, is build my factions in Hero Forge. If you're not familiar with it, HeroForge.com is a online tool. You don't need to download anything to create custom miniatures. You can do it and like put full color on it. So you don't ever have to download it. If you just want it for the, if you just want to like do it to play with for art and character ideas, you can do that and save that stuff, which is what most people do. You can buy virtual tabletop tokens off of it. You can buy the STLs if you want to 3D print them yourself. You can buy the actual printed models, and you can even so much as buy a full color printed 3D model, like fully 3D printed in color, like no paint, no, you don't, can't scratch off the paint.
You can get them in like pewter, can't you? Like
you can get them in metals. I think it's brass or something. Okay. They used to do steel, but I don't do that anymore. You can also get 2D acrylic standees now, or what they called. So you can get your character in a 2D acrylic art.
To be clear, they don't just do miniatures as a whole. We're talking about like player characters, orcs, dwarves, elves, humans.
Oh, they have a huge range of people, and people make wild stuff. If you get into the community, you'll see like there are people that use, there's like a bunch of tail glitches or tail tricks that if you put a tail and hide it through limbs and then have it popping out at the right point, you can do stuff like set up a shield to look like a table, and you can be like cooking on that table by setting up a campfire under the table to look like a little fire, and like have them with a pan. You can do crazy stuff on there. People are very talented with stuff they do. They're also going to be coming out with kit bashing this year, so that you don't actually have to do those weird glitchy things. You can just take an item and place it wherever you want and then get the STL for it. Cool. They're working on that. That's just very hard to accomplish, so they're working on it. Really excited about that. They also have a side tool, I don't remember what it's called, where you can make monsters, and they'll be updating so you can make custom mounts and pets and stuff. Anyway, love this tool. I like to use it to make my factions. Even if I don't ever make the miniature, I at least have in my head like what the factions look like, and kind of it helps me define a lot of like rank for military structures or like just things like that. And I've got a Reddit notification on my laptop the other day, or on my work machine or my desktop, whatever. I work on my personal desktop.
Your pooter.
My pooter. One of my mini pooters. I'm a software engineer, so I got a lot of freaking pooters. Anyway.
I like going there for lunch.
Anyway, I got this Reddit notification, and it was like, look at this random Final Fantasy 14 character art. and it was really freaking cool, way beyond anything I was actually expecting to see, and kind of fit in with the theme I was going for better than I was expecting. And I have now taken that character art, built it in Hero Forge. I posted it on the Reddit thread and was like, hey, I made this because of your inspiration. Appreciate it. So let the guy know I wasn't being rude or anything.
We should throw that up on social media so people can, I'll make a meme of it or something.
For sure. And we'll tag the guy. I really liked that, but I recreated it. And it's basically just like a red armored, like, tech samurai is really the best way for me to put it.
Cyber-eye. No, that doesn't work.
No, get out. That's like Machine Beholder. Anyway, so I've been making my factions in Hero Forge, and it's been really cool. Use that tool. It's a lot of fun, especially if you just, like, if you've got free time that you're spending on doing literally nothing and you like making D&D characters and you've never heard of this, you will probably love this tool because you can make all of the D&D characters in your head in this tool. It might not be perfect. And it's also got, from my time looking at the 3D printing community for D&D, there are like different scale types. Even say you have like 32 millimeter, which is like approximately 1 inch, mm-hmm. It's about 1 inch is like, it's like 5 feet or 6 feet, something like that, for character height, something like that. Anyway, there are things like, depending on say the thickness of the arms and all of the objects, if it looks more like a comic book versus more realistic, right? So I, as I understand it, like the comic book style, where it's like everything's like a little thicker, bolder, and kind of stands out from further away, that's heroic sizing or something like that. There's like terminology for all this anyway. Hero Forge definitely has that more like comic book look, yeah, and feel.
I prefer the more realistic ones, but like Hero Forge is awesome just for, you know, just creating character ideas.
I actually prefer the comic book look personally at my table because it's more striking from further away. I'm not a good painter, so I don't like painting the realistic stuff because it's always got way too many tiny little details. And this stuff is just a lot easier to paint and get through.
That is very, very true.
So I get where you're coming from. I love the realistic look. Like, I have
it's cool for monsters.
Like, I have Archvillain games.
Horrifying, yeah.
Yeah, all the Archvillain game stuff I have is like that really highly detailed resin stuff that I print. Like the T-Rex over miniatures. There with the sword. I have a T-Rex warrior, Aztec T-Rex warrior with a giant sword. It's amazing.
Dude, they make some awesome, awesome stuff.
But that's really hard for me to paint.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
I could paint more and I'd probably get better at it, but it's just not that kind of hobby that I'm super into. That's why I'm really excited for like 10 years from now, consumer 3D printers being able to do color printing really, really well. Thanks to people like Hero Forge in particular for starting that kind of stuff. When that is in home and I can just design something, get the STL in color and print it, I'm all about it. I will never touch paint in my life.
It'd be interesting to see the direction that 3D printing goes, because if you have, like if the government passes like right to repair laws, you could get like a parts manual for your car or something around your house that broke and print that thing. And I think that would be amazing to get to that point. I don't know if it ever will, because you're talking about losing out on so much money. That
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's like an industry thing, but that's already a thing, dude. Yeah. Like all of the 3D printing like communities I'm in, people are like, oh, I've measured, designed, and printed this piece that broke for I saw a dude who's like, I needed a new handle for my, I don't know what it's called. When you like wind up a hose on, when it's got like the crank handle for like winding a hose around a tube.
Spool?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, there you go. Jeez. Like a hose spool. He needed like a handle for a hose spool, and he measured the fitting for it, designed the whole thing, 3D printed it, and now has a new handle. And was just like, hey, look, everybody, I do this too.
Instead of anything, I want to be able to like Google
Like, you can for a lot of things.
Google like the serial number of my thing and then be like, all right, I want this button fixed.
You want a standardized cottage industry around it where you well, can that's go, not to some, go somewhere.
Because I'm lazy and I don't want to have to create something like that.
I mean, also planned obsolescence is a bunch of
yeah.
B.
Yeah.
Okay, but, no, hold on. Back up. I was actually having this conversation with Anna the other day. I just said I'm a software engineer, but back up for a second. I went to school for mechanical engineering. And we learned all about planned obsolescence. And it has a very valid reason. And then a lot of companies take it to an extreme that is bad. Everything fails, right?
Sure.
Testing something and building it so that you know what stresses will make it fail means you can give an understanding of how long something's going to last. Because if you build something and you don't have this understanding of it, right, then you don't know when it's going to expire. So planned obsolescence isn't necessarily like there are companies like say Apple that's like we're going to make it so that our software starts failing after 3 years so that you have to buy a new phone. I know that that's like I don't know if that's actually been proven. I don't know if these things, if that's real or not, but that kind of thing definitely exists.
I mean, started nuking the battery life.
But the basic idea of planned obsolescence is actually very important because all it is understanding that the engineering level what will cause this to fail so you can tell the consumer this is how long it should last because we know that like have you
all
ever
these seen, parts are continuing well
isn't that just
at least
tolerancing though isn't that just knowing the tolerances and the stress limits of all of your objects
but that's kind of what planned obsolescence is
because it well then it
has yeah. a very bad rep because there are companies that do horrible well, things with it but conceptually when you're learning about it it's like cool okay one of the machines that I honestly I can remember the sound of this and I hate it so much because it was in this lab for so long. There was a machine that these students set up. You remember the card readers in college that we used yeah. everywhere? Somebody wanted to test how long it would take a card reader to fail. So they bought a brand new card reader and like 300 cards and they just had a machine that would and every time it would get to the end, it would like clack, 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 clack and make this like slishing noise every fucking time. And dude, it was months in this lab that I had to be in every day of just and it was fucking awful but like people do that kind of thing to find out when something is going to fail the whole process is just testing it's or I'm sure there are companies that are like we already know that so you can test like micro stresses on things by like putting a micro stress reader on it and then reading from it. Anyway, you can test how like stresses, like micro stresses on things. And sure, you can build something that you know maybe the average consumer will do this and it wouldn't break, and we could use this shittier one and it will break. That's not planned obsolescence. That's just a shitty company.
Well, it sounds
they're criminalizing planned obsolescence.
They've just kind of repurposed the term. It's gone from being an engineering term, which has practical applications, to a business term, which is how can we
get people to buy this again?
The amount of consumers that consistently
how
come
can
back?
We kill the environment faster?
Yeah.
Where the idea should be, how do we balance cost on our end, cost to the consumer, and lifespan of the object so that all of these things are within acceptable parameters? And not a lot of companies do that. They kind of leave out the life cycle, lifespan. They just figure out the lifespan and figure out what the best cost is to them and what they can shove off to the consumers, and then they just ship. And that's just bad practice. But like that, yeah.
I'm just excited for when the Treants and the Myconids wake up and go fuck you.
I am the Lorax, and I speak for the trees. And the trees say, "Could you fucking not?"
Did you guys practice this or something?
No, it's a meme.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a reference.
Oh, God. It's so good. It's such a good meme, though.
You guys didn't rehearse anything with me.
No, I just knew what he was going to say, so all I had to do was line up with him.
So for planned obsolescence, what most relationships fail at, like, I think the 4-year and the 7-year mark.
Yep. Mine failed at 7.
So should...
No, it failed a long time before that, and I just was writing a dead zombie.
So aside from, like...
As a relationship, not sexually. Get that. Don't give me that face, Dylan. You're the creep. We already talked
about... Are we doing phrasing?
No.
Are we still doing phrasing?
We already talked about zombie sex on this podcast in a previous episode. Get out.
Wait. I don't think I listened to that episode.
You weren't here for it either. Yeah.
It was just the two of us. It hasn't gone live.
I forget the joke, but it was a joke about... Wait, who was it? Anyway, I forget it offhand. Anyway, moving on. 7-year mark.
Oh, yeah. So should, the concept of marriage be changed to, a 4-year, 7-year contract?
Actually, there's a bunch of talk going around about that online now.
I don't want to say this, but, it's like signing a lease on a car. And I don't mean that.
But there's nothing wrong with that. You can just re-sign later. But it's like people change, and you might be deeply in love now and not deeply in love later. And as somebody who had all of my possessions taken from me because I didn't want to get a court involved and have my paycheck taken from me too. You should be able to walk away without any risk after so long if you don't want to be there anymore.
Because it really is just for tax purposes.
Yeah.
Marriage? That's really 100%. All they did was financially incentivize two people binding themselves.
And it just forces people to it makes it harder to break up if they have kids.
Marriage played a very different role in culture.
Okay, no, the thing that makes it harder to break up if you have kids is our court system.
Yeah.
But also, it's just, it's a more delicate situation. You're dealing with people that didn't ask to be made, that now have to deal with the fact that their parents hate each other.
Should parents stay together and hate each other in front of their kids, or should they just with it?
But I'm just saying, it's at that point it gets messier because there are more people involved and there are more ways for people to screw up.
Dice and dungeons right.
Well, that's why I brought up Treants and Myconids, but I was promptly shelved.
The thing with celebrities, it's I just have an 18-month relationship with this person until it inevitably falls apart.
But they get paid for those. They get paid for those and make money off of those.
Look at how much Pete Davidson's career is going to be bigger just for his time with what's her face?
Kardashian. Hey, by the way, listeners, I saw one of the Kardashians here in Denver over the summer.
Didn't you see that one, weird. Kim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like nobody believes me, but I staunchly sober saw this person and I was twice. It was just a very weird experience. But yeah, Pete Davidson.
I've seen some cool celebrities, but it's always people that wouldn't be huge celebrities to anybody else. I forget the dude's name now. It was 4 years ago. I went to a drag race at like a car drag race.
They're popular here in Denver.
Yeah, the Bandimere Speedway. I actually used to work out with a Bandimere, a woman whose last name is Bandimere. She married into that family. And then got divorced out of that family a long time later. It wasn't a quick thing. She was a cool woman. Anyway, I went to the Speedway and I walked by this dude and I was that man was the size of an actual gorilla. What the shit? And I turned around and looked at him and I can't remember his name now, but he was a UFC fighter. And I knew of him at the time. I was fighting at the time and I didn't catch it at first because I didn't want to break my back looking up at him. I'm pretty sure the dude was 6'7" or something. He was massive, freaking huge. And I was just by the way, I'm 5'9". I'm not a tall man. So I was I'm not about to break my neck looking up at him. But when I got further away, I was oh shit, that man's could punch basically anybody here and just watch their head burst like a little water balloon.
And that's the wizard I want to play. I want to play a strength wizard because I feel like it would be so much fun.
Would you be willing to play the muscle wizard from Valdis Spire of Secrets?
What is...
It's a barbarian wizard subclass that casts, quote, spells, and if it has a special barbarian feature, you have to meet certain conditions to continue raging or to rage.
Yeah.
So this gets free rages. They're one turn rages. If anybody ever accuses you of not really being a wizard, you can freely rage for one turn and bash them, but you have to use your turn to attack them and be violent against them. It's basically the whole subclass is you're a barbarian that thinks you're a wizard, and when people tell you you're not, you just beat them with spells, but your spells are just your fists.
So they're delusional?
Yes. That'd be angry
about it. That sounds like more of like a background than like a subclass.
Well, it has like a bunch of class features that go with it. It's fun.
Huh. I do not want to play that.
It definitely sounds like something you have to commit to the role, because otherwise it's just not. If your whole kit is getting angry because somebody told you you can't cast spells, so you have to play that up.
You could. There are a large number of spells that buff you that don't require concentration. I think Mirror Image is one of them. If you went Wizard Barbarian and you got the unarmed fighting feature that lets you do D6s or D8s of damage, you could be a muscle wizard that literally buffs yourself with like defensives or offensives that aren't concentration, then rages and goes in and punches everything to death.
That's the Blood Rager from Pathfinder. It was a barbarian sorcerer combo that, like, you just can't play the class effectively because you need. It was one of those mad classes.
Yeah, barbarian sorcerer feels like it would need like four things out of the six.
Yeah, it's like mad is multiple attribute dependency, like the old paladins.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I want to play like this forge wizard. He makes like enchanted objects, and he's just a total badass.
But he's
like a black
an artificer.
No, he's can actually do things in less than 10 minutes.
Ow!
Yeah.
Every time downtime.
I don't know. Maybe like being able to make a magic item in 6 seconds isn't.
Balanced or in any sense.
No, that's literally what they can do.
I can cast detect magic, and I can also make a magic item in my downtime.
Well, he uses 10 minutes because he doesn't want to spend a spell slot.
He does rituals every
time. How many spell slots does he have?
Not as many as a wizard, but more than a
monk.
Warlock or a sorcerer.
Yeah, more than a warlock.
Everybody's got more spells. Dude, my barbarian had 2 spells. Like.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the concept behind Eldritch Invocations, but that's part of the problem. I wish that Eldritch Invocations weren't trash right after you get them. So, one of them that I think is really amazing, if it would scale at all, is the one that lets you cast False Life for free.
Just 10 hit points, but it's always 5.
No, it's it's like 1d4 plus 4, something like that.
It's not going to be much.
Yeah, I think it's 5 to 8, something like that. But it is, oh no, it's like 5 plus something, because it's like 5 extra for every.
You were right the first time.
What,
1d4 plus 4?
1d4 plus 4, and then when you upcast it. And when you up, no, it does scale when you upcast it, but it only
ever. 5 every additional.
Five, so it's like if you could cast that, say, even just for free once a day, at your spell level as a warlock, that Eldritch Invocation would scale and be useful for the rest of the game, because I am not about to give myself 5 to 8 extra hit points with an Eldritch Invocation at level 20. Dude. But I will give myself 25 to 40 extra hit points.
That would be sick for a Hexblade.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And you don't have to concentrate on that. So if you could do that, and you could have like Armor of Agathys, you could wait for that to drop. You could pop Armor of Agathys on yourself. You've got all the extra, you've got what, 25 extra hit points again, because you're saying at level 20, you've got the 5th level spell slots. So you got 25 extra hit points. So you say you had 40, and now you've got, that's 65 extra hit points that before you've ever been touched.
For a, what, D6? D8 class?
You have a D8 class. Like, that's great. But at level 20, if you try to cast that False Life on yourself, the Eldritch Invocation specifies it's always at first level.
So that's lame.
What's the point? That's completely useless. They actually have made it so that there are a couple of them that are in there that are decent. Like, you can cast mage armor on yourself at will without expending a spell slot. That one's nice. If you're ranged, cool. But if you're a hexblade, your armor's going to be better than that, so you're not going to do that.
Oh yeah, doesn't add on top.
But for the most part, when I look at them and I'm playing a Warlock trying to build it, I feel like what they have provided to me goes, hey, just pick the stuff for Eldritch Blast because everything else is not good. And because I don't play in most people's games. I feel like there's still probably the majority of games don't use a whole lot of terrain in their combat in terms of like what's there. So you're not going to have a lot of verticality. So the idea of like pushing and pulling somebody 5 feet with an attack,
it doesn't seem useful until you see a battle map that has
verticality. And then it is useful, but every other time it's like, that's not really great. So Eldritch Invocations, we're going back to hating on Warlocks. Eldritch Invocations are just like not really worth it most of the time, in my opinion.
Isn't it for breaking attack of opportunity range mostly, or pulling it away from somebody?
Yeah, stuff like that. But honestly, meh. At best, that's not like...
Just cast Gust?
Be a wizard and have like...
More spells.
Have the spell that lets you cast like a tunnel of wind in a large area that has a higher DC and isn't for one creature.
I mean, I stand by what I said. I think that they should just... The Eldritch Blast should just grow as their character kit separately. Remove the Eldritch Invocations for it. They don't need to be there because you're already... It's literally a cantrip, basically only they can
get... Wait, are you implying that an Eldritch Blast should become a skill tree?
Give them all of the attributes for it that they pick at certain level tiers. Give them something else.
Skill tree.
Essentially, okay.
Like, you know that
5, you choose one of these.
You know the 10. Meme of the comic panels where they're like, hey, this is what we need. And they're like, haha, yes, yes. And the third guy's like, oh, why don't we actually do this? And then they throw him out the window. That's what wizards just did with you. We don't do skill trees here.
Well, they're not wizards. So
I mean Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards of the Coast. Then don't call it a skill tree. Just make it.
No, they don't do anything like skill trees.
Of course we meant Wizards of the Coast. Fucking weeb.
But they're not wizards.
Actually, they don't cast arcane magic. They are granted magic by a patron.
They're shitty clerics are what warlocks are.
They're clerics of lesser beings than gods. They're so actually in a
That's
sense.
That's not necessarily true.
But none of them, I mean, other than the old one, Cthulhu be praised, there a lot of the things are kind of, it loosely implies that it's at a certain tier. I don't know.
No, it's just they're literally the same thing, except they go about it differently. One is a simp and one's a businessman.
Wait, what are we talking about again?
A cleric is a simp for their god. A warlock is just somebody that goes, I see you have power. Give it to me. Here is my contract.
So worship versus a...
Simpery. Simpery versus...
That's what I call the
simpery,
worship.
Simpery versus capitalism.
So a life of service.
Okay, a warlock is just a priest of capitalism.
I'd call them more an interplanar lawyer or negotiator.
Oh, speaking of, to this day, I want to play in a one-shot as an Arakocra order cleric named Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Why?
Because it's amazing.
All right, we should do one shot, and everybody has to make a ridiculous character.
I mean,
like,
if that's how you're going to do it, then everybody has to reflavor a character.
What was the name of the villain? What was his name? You know, the red faced dude.
Was it not just Ghostface?
No, it wasn't Ghostface. Oh man, I'll have to find that out. Do you know what we're talking about?
What?
Space Ghost? Nope. Coast to Coast?
Nope.
Space Ghost?
Space Ghost?
You don't know? You don't recognize Space Ghost?
It was a pseudo talk show that played on Adult Swim.
But it came,
dude. I didn't grow up with television.
That's fair. You would not have seen it.
I saw like Prince of Bel-Air in 2008. Like, my first year of college, like, or 2007.
You don't recognize Harvey Birdman, attorney at law?
You loosely recognize it from the internet.
Wait, didn't they? Who? What didn't a TV show spoof him? Did like Rick and Morty?
No, he had a whole
no. That was from Space Ghost. That was like
Bird or whatever.
That was kind of like a spoof. Oh my, wait.
What's his name?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Rick and Morty.
Oh, Birdman or Phoenix Man, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that's
Bird Person.
And then Phoenix Person.
Yeah, and then Phoenix Person. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's who I was thinking. Hey, did you hear they got renewed for another season?
I mean, why at this
point,
would they not?
At this point, it's like, just another like Family Guy.
It's a cult classic.
They started a trend, and now every other streaming service is trying to make a comparable adult animation. So why would they not keep it going? Because it's already got a popular
They're following. Making, like, Justin Roiland is making others. The one you've been wanting me to watch.
Oh, Solar Opposites.
Solar Opposites, yeah.
Are all these people going to pay us and give us stuff for plugging them on this show?
Nope.
Yo, that would be super cool, because then I could just be like, I don't know, people with money. Bill Gates.
Bring money.
Give us money, man.
I love how ridiculous this episode's been.
Wait.
We have not had a remotely close to anything like a topic.
Okay.
And that sentence came out really poorly.
You've come back to Warlocks multiple times.
Oh, yeah. So we're dunking on Warlocks with other topics.
I mean, Brandon asked about clerics.
I did. That was a while ago. So I want to talk about something cool that we just did in our campaign, because we really have not talked about this campaign much.
They haven't done anything in a month.
Yeah, well,
like, in a month of sessions, like four sessions, they basically agreed that they didn't know how to kill somebody and that they would hopefully maybe kill them eventually.
Okay, so what happened?
And then they watched them die in an arena.
I had a good idea, and it took four sessions for the party to go through with it.
Look, I don't control where these things go.
I think we mentioned this on another episode. So we get this mission to steal a Fabergé egg from a powerful person in the city. And it was on display in this art museum. And so we had to steal this and bring it back to our
benefactor. It was on display in a Museum of Natural Science in Arcana, and you needed it, take it back to the art museum. I got the idea. Here's another plug from the DM lair. The whole concept of the adventure came from something he said that he did in one of his campaigns, where his people had to steal an object from a museum but steal nothing else from that museum, and then they stole a bunch of loot, and then the museum owner sent assassins after them.
I mean, that does...
Which is what I was trying to bait you into doing.
So if we stole this object, assassins would be sent after us and until we got back and returned this.
No. Or if you stole just the egg, she wouldn't have a problem with that, because
that was a game between these two people.
Yeah.
So Peter insta fails the mission and goes to the person we're supposed to steal from and said, hey, this guy said we're going to steal this from you. Can you just, like, give it to us and, like, it'll be just a fun thing and then we don't have to do any work? And then while he was getting stared at incredulously by this character, my character decided, oh, I'm going to walk around this museum and see...
While invisible.
And you failed two stealth checks. Yeah. One at the beginning.
Dude, I failed most of my spell checks this campaign.
Stealth checks.
Yeah. I don't know why you said stealth checks. To be fair, but Peter did bring what he believed to be a bargaining chip. He thought that if he allowed this druid who ran the museum, a hobgoblin, to examine the dragon that follows us around with our Drake Warden.
We're going too far off. Yeah, there was a lot that happened here.
He didn't just walk up.
I don't even want to talk about this part. This is just like the buildup. We fail the quest to the point where we're going to get killed. My character's going to get killed if I don't perform an assassination.
Because he is a... kind of renowned assassin in the right circles.
And so I'm like, okay, cool, I'll do it. Who do we have to kill? And this NPC says, oh, you have to kill this were-shark who's like the top in this gladiator arena, and the arena's underwater, and also you can't breathe underwater. So that was our quest, was to assassinate this were-shark who I personally...
Half-giant were-shark.
So I actually have a really cool Wereshark mini, and that one of my players printed off for me. And it's like, I have that on the shelf with some other stuff that's not painted. And I just like occasionally like move it a little bit because they don't go over and look at the shelf every week. And I just move it. And they'd be like, did you move the Wereshark? Why did you touch the Wereshark mini? So we had to kill this Wereshark, and
I had such a cool Wereshark mini ready for this.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Was it like the huge version?
It was a large creature.
So, mine's like a little more cartoony, but it was still cool. So yeah, we had to assassinate this Wereshark, and because he had blackmail on our whoever's blackmailing
on the hobgoblin druid that ran the museum.
So I was like, hey, our party is 0% melee except for the companion to the ranger.
The Drake Warden companion?
Yes. We have a Drake Warden ranger, which is a really cool subclass.
That I have had to buff because
otherwise
because
it would be
really
lame.
Because it is really not a cool subclass.
Yeah, so I was like, hey, we need to find another way to assassinate this guy. And so our party eventually, I'm just fast forwarding, don't say anything. Four sessions later, we settled on, we had done this like, we did a B&E to like recon some information, and two of our players had an incident with some lockers that went very poorly.
Oh, that was hilarious. So they wanted to break in and steal uniforms so they could look like they belonged here. And they go into the maintenance closet, basically, which is actually like a pretty fairly large room. It's got like a series of lockers in there and some other stuff. And they try to break into this locker that is locked. And I've never seen that many bad rolls in a row. It was like
gaseous formed into the locker.
Before that though, failed like at the lock picking side of it. It was like four rolls in a row of just like miserable failure. Just
brutalized.
Broke the pick, then broke the lock.
Yep. Broke all of his fingers. Yeah,
so he goes gaseous form and goes into the locker, goes back out.
No, he got stuck.
No. Goes back out of gaseous form. That was the rest of that sentence, sorry. And gets stuck because he's now an adult stuck in a fucking locker.
So he thought he could just like blow it out.
Yeah, like he's the Hulk or something.
Yeah.
And then the bard, this is the warlock that did that, the bard is like, I'll help.
Tries to pop out the hinge. He fails.
Tries to pop out the hinge, miserably. Breaks his dagger off in the gap of the hinge. So now has jammed the door closed, not just locked it. So it is locked and jammed and basically unmovable because it's got a piece of steel holding it closed. And then he's like, cool, I am going to break it away from the wall. Rolls like a one.
Yeah, he literally rolled a one.
Locker falls on
the locker fell onto him. So now one of them is in the locker face down. The other one is under the locker with it face down on him, and they are stuck. And it took, I don't know, 35 minutes, but it was
a good amount of time.
It was so funny.
Ranger had to come in and help them.
Yeah, the ranger and the dragon came in and peeled the locker up, and then the warlock Misty stepped out because he was able to see out of the gaps in the locker door.
That was really funny.
Oh man.
So I'm not gonna lie, I feel like to me that was worth all of those sessions.
Wait, but then like, so Peter's wild, he always does something weird. So we're trying to find dirt on this Wereshark. We're like, all right, let's find like fighting records, medical history, whatever, you know. And so Peter decides he's going to – so he doesn't have to breathe underwater. He's a – what?
Ergenasi.
Ergenasi. So he goes down underwater, and there's a whole underwater city down there. And he decides he's going to feign – well, he didn't have to feign an illness. He's cursed with like a
– He has
flesh,
an illness.
Flesh disease or something. Just a curse. And
void.
Peter has his character go to this doctor's office and meet with this gladiator's doctor, who was also
a were-shark.
And he role-played this whole thing, and it cost us 270 gold for that appointment, which is like, you know, that's...
That's a doctor.
That's about fair. Yeah, that's about what it is nowadays.
It's good to know it's rough out there, too.
Yeah, they did not accept land insurance.
Oh, no, no land insurance. Yeah. No.
So we end up getting these medical records. We
except, translated. Sorry, they do accept Land Lumbers, Inc. Sorry, continue.
Phrasing?
So we find from these medical records that because this were-shark, what's his name, Valentine?
Yeah.
Wait, Valentine. That's from Fallout 4.
I mean, lots of things have used the name Valentine.
Now, you see here, kid. I'm Nikki Valentine.
Oh, yeah.
So we find out that because when he transforms from half-giant to were-shark, his skin gets really messed up, and he puts this...
He gets abrasion burns from his armor.
Yeah. I mean, transforming into your animal form seems like it would be rough, but doing that in armor where your body can't do all the weird things it probably does, I don't know. I've never done it before.
So
I do it all the time. It's fine.
Just hold Shea butter at the gym. Just wear two tight shirts so you can rip them.
Just casually flexing my wear creature form.
Do you know how uncomfortable it is to wear a shirt that is so tight that you could flex and rip it? I just...
Nope.
I went from so skinny when I was like 20 to like bro buff when I was 21 that I had some shirts that I could no longer fit in because like if I did, I would rip them. What's wrong? It's like, what? Why would you put that on?
How is it comfortable?
You are obviously doing it to rip the shirt. I get that. But just getting it on is so uncomfortable anyway.
It's for the pump.
Anyway, so you guys met with Valentine's doctor and you ended up finding out that he uses this like spread on the inside of his armor.
This powder.
Powder, which turns, when he puts with the water, turns into a cream. But puts on inside of his armor and puts his armor on, and then he's good to go. So they go meet with their...
This is a whole other thing. The circus. Oh, my God.
There's a party member that is going to take Bloodhunter eventually at Order of the Lycan because his backstory is he's a were-rat, and he's an artificer, and he's got a rat... His artificer companion is a were-rat bot. And he's also the ugliest freaking human with the like nastiest bowl cut. His first mini didn't have ears, which made it worse and terrifying.
he literally plays the character as this hyper nerd.
Yep.
And having the bowl cut is just chef's kiss.
Yep. You know, we all live vicariously through D&D, and some people just want to play themselves.
Yeah. But egregious nerd.
He doesn't listen to this. If he did, I hope he laughs. he's also an engineer, right?
He's an architect.
Okay.
So he's like, I know somebody in town that can help us with some knowledge about were creatures, hopefully. So they go to this place called Gretch's Grand Circus, which is this massive circus in town run by Gretch, who is a giant, who is a
massively obese ogre.
He wasn't an ogre. He's a giant.
Giant.
Straight giant.
Looked like an ogre.
Yeah, but super obese. On purpose, if you guys ever get there, you'll see why he's obese. It's actually because I have a mini to represent him, and the mini is like this giant fat rat pope.
Rat Pope. Oh, wait, I feel like I've seen that.
I'm pretty sure I've shown it to you.
Yeah, I think you did.
But they go there, and they actually get distracted just with the carnival at first because...
Because we kept winning at everything.
He wasn't there. We were told he was not there, so we were like...
You had to wait for the show that evening. You guys could have just watched the show, but you wanted to play games, and then we skipped the show. It was one or the other. Anyway.
This is the one time like everybody rolled like really well.
Yeah, and everybody wanted to be involved. Yeah. So also, it's like, if your D&D characters go to a circus, that's like...
never seen something like that before.
Well, no, but you have to. You have to role play some stuff with the D&D character.
You have to do something.
That's like part of it.
I don't want to be here.
It's like the classic idea of starting in a carnival. You'd start with carnival games, and then demons burst in and like burst out of a woman's chest, and everyone starts screaming, and that sets off the story. That's literally straight out of Neverwinter Nights 2. Except it wasn't goblins. It was like lizard folk.
You're in a place playing a role-playing game. Why wouldn't you just role play and like do the thing?
But so they get involved with all of these games, and somebody asks at one point if like gnomes are involved, and I went, oh
Peter did,
yeah, and I was like, oh yeah, gnomes are involved. Wait,
gnomes are involved.
But there are also giants involved, and I was like, okay, I know what's going on now. So every game they went to was, and I'm sorry for the people that don't like this, but it was just like new forms of carnival gnome abuse. Yeah, like if you wanted to throw knives at a board, you had to, they would strap a gnome up to a board and you had to like aim for parts of their body, or you had to aim like around their body for the easy section, the easy portion, stuff like that. And you'd win different prizes.
And if you throw poorly, you stab the gnome. Dude, I killed a whole bunch of gnomes. I got some really good throws.
And then they wanted to do like the hammer challenge, where you like the hammer strength challenge. That's pretty classic at carnivals. And they had to flip a boulder. I actually got that straight out of Critical Role. And but on the edge of the boulder were these two gnomes, and you basically got more points for how far you threw the gnomes.
You got like a 26 on that, 25 on that.
They did roll. Not die.
They flew into. Most of the gnomes didn't die. It was really just the more dangerous games. But there was a bunch of gnome abuse games, and
well, there was the gnome toss.
There was gnome toss, the strength game, and dagger throwing.
So like here.
Oh yeah, gnome tossing was great because Peter used his illusions to actually make this really awesome.
Yeah, well, Dylan, why don't you talk about that?
Well, because actually, both of us did it. I did it first, and then Peter did it. And my character's strength based, so I did it the legit way. I just threw a gnome. Did pretty well.
They threw these gnomes into like a
pool of water.
A pool of water. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And so they were safe. This was actually one of the safer ones.
It was a roll for
strength and dexterity.
Yeah.
Right?
For how far, and then accuracy. And I did pretty good.
Wait, did you roll poorly the first time? The second time? Did Peter just roll poorly? No.
Peter didn't have to roll.
Somebody rolled poorly and threw a gnome off the side, though, right? I remember that distinctively. Somebody threw poorly. And threw them not into the pool because it was like a rectangular pool, but threw them off to the edge of it and like threw them off the side.
Who would it have been in our group?
It was everybody. Everyone was there.
Yeah, no. But who else
did threw?
Three could have been Soren. I guess it could have been Soren.
Oh yeah, he did try to do it.
Yeah, that was funny. Bard. The bard tries to do it, throws poorly.
Ate shit.
But go ahead.
Yeah, but I did real well overall. Didn't break the record, but I came real close.
The record was 30 feet. You got it. How many?
I think it was like 29. It was
It was like 37 feet, and you got it like 34.
Yeah, I was very very close for the DC for it. But that was fine. I mean, a snuggle beast is a snuggle beast. I ain't gonna complain.
It's also a creature from Griffin Saddlebag.
You
snuggle it during short rests and get more hit points back.
Yeah.
It's a stuffed animal. You got a
stuffed owlbear.
I got a stuffed owlbear.
He got the unicorn.
I do believe.
Yeah. Stuffed unicorn.
Yeah. But when Peter went up, he immediately goes to the gnome he's about to throw. He goes, "I'll give you some gold to just walk back in that tent and not ask questions."
The gnome walked away.
Yeah, the gnome took the gold, easy gold. He then proceeded to use major image to depict himself throwing this fairly well beyond the limit.
No. He was like, what's the limit? Like 37? I thought 38 feet.
Yeah, he did it just one more to make it believable. He didn't want to blow it up. But
and did it. Everybody was amazed. The crowd went wild. And then he had the illusion make it so that the gnome climbed out of the pool, walked into the tent with the rest of the gnomes, and then disappeared.
And then so everybody's like picking this gnome up, and all the other gnomes pick him up and start cheering for him. And the ones that were outside, and they're like, oh my God, that was amazing. And then I have like one of them be like, why is he dry?
That was funny. So we eventually meet Gretch, this half giant obese guy. And he gives Mike's character some cool like access to what's going to be the Blood Hunter, I think.
Yeah,
talking about cool stuff. But Gretch also knows a lot of things.
I mean, he is a gentleman of business and has many objects that others might turn their nose up on. So he happened to have some incredibly deadly poisons.
And he talks like this, by the way. You can barely use his mouth. It's so full of food and spit all the time.
I don't know if that even came through clearly in the mic.
No, but that would sound like his voice.
That did sound like his voice.
So we gave this Gretch a blank check of we'll do one thing for you, which we're always going to regret. And we get this contact poison, and we decide we are going to sneak. We're going to take this poison, make it into... look like this powder that this Wereshark uses. And then we're also going to put silver shavings in it just because, all right,
we wanted it to be very, very, very effective.
We just want it to be the biggest F you to this thing. And so the whole idea was we get this poison, we get it set up, sneak into the doctor's office, swap it out with his medication. He picks it up at the doctor's office. He applies it right before his fight, and there's this badass underwater arena fight between a
water ganassi, woman that was a ice sorceress.
So cool! Just how you described that fight was awesome, and then the Wereshark comes out and
she really massive. Was awesome.
They were both was. Awesome.
Past tense. Yeah.
So our
so they did half the side quests in hurting him, but they didn't do anything they even talked about possibly doing something to kind of help buff her and prep her for the fight, but they decided not to because it had already taken so long to get everything done. So they did half the side quests and basically got the middling result where they fight. She's using all this ice magic to basically defend herself. And the theme was she would make an ice shield. And when he broke it, the shattered pieces would become spears and stab into him. That was the base premise for her skill set. And she was underwater. So it was all this other stuff to go with it. And she ends up killing him. You could see it from a distance. His skin was dissolving into the water around him.
So the Wereshark basically had to take damage, and then her poison would kick in.
No, it was already kicked in. He was already taking damage.
That was
actively.
The point of the abrasions, is that it already has blood contact.
Oh, yeah,
right there.
Yeah, yep. That's right.
So, and it was a flesh eating thing, so it was just eating his flesh to start with.
Yeah, but they both died in the fight.
So yeah,
but it covered us.
She ended up pulling this big ice lance and throwing it right at his chest as he was charging her. And he eats the shot to the chest. He's got this lance sticking out of his heart, but it gave him enough time to grab her by the neck and just split her skull open down to her heart. And they both just kind of died right there. And
still
then,
sad we didn't get that axe.
Yeah, and then they decided to go find the guy's house and loot it. One of his people was looting it. Already,
I kind of loosely mentioned it, and then the face that Peter and Soren both made—they just went, "Wait, oh my God, you're right!" I sprint to his house.
So they went, and Peter used a hypnotic pattern to detain the guy that was in there, already robbing the place. And he goes in and he takes the three other axes: the Tyrannosaurus Rex, the obsidian axe, and it was
chromatic obsidian axe, and then the feller.
Yeah, tree felling axe. It was a great axe that if you hit a tree, it just falls over.
You get advantage to cut down trees, a spectral tree fall on
you. You can summon a spectral tree to do force damage to people. It's pretty fun. It's a great flavor. All of those are from Griffin's Saddlebag. So they get all this stuff, and that's fun. So they have to put up, you want a DM confession here?
Yeah.
He was the Hobgoblin's ex-lover, and he was trying to get away from her because she was problematic. And she hired you to kill him because he wouldn't be with her. So there was no blackmail ever involved in there. You guys just didn't question the situation and killed the dude for nothing.
Yeah, the only person that interacted with her to do the contract didn't ask questions because that's not her MO.
That's not what I do. I do the job.
Yeah.
It's so much I'm at peace with what I do. Because if somebody powerful says they need to go, then that's because they're a problem.
Yeah.
Except this time it wasn't someone powerful. It was somebody who could send you to jail.
I know, she's powerful. Someone powerful. This is a druid with this magic arcana museum. Like,
that has a game where they can hire assassins kill people.
I'm not saying she wasn't like, she was something.
She had a Fabergé egg. They're worth like $38 million.
And they're just casually trading it back and forth like a football.
Fair.
38 million gold's worth of dollars.
I hate you sometimes.
Worth of gold.
Wait, go back to the gold standard.
So, did you realize that, like, we gave the shark silver bond?
So
I thought that was
literally what we did.
I thought that was going to go somewhere else.
I think that's where we're going to roll it out for the day. Well, thanks for everybody listening to us ramble on about some D&D stuff. We will be doing these every once in a while because I just like the free rambling content. Some of my favorite content to make is just chatting about D&D. But yeah, thanks for coming out, guys. Dylan, you want to give us exit?
I hope that you know that each one of these takes at least a dozen moments off of my lifespan.
Dude, we only have 520,000 followers. We can't afford to lose any over this.
I mean, we're just going to gain extra people over a good hiyah. Stay safe out there, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us anywhere podcasts go to adventure.
So like, subscribe, and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform. You can follow us on Twitter at D20 Tower to find out when we're posting new episodes, or toss a coin to these casters on Patreon.
Again, that's at D20 Tower. Until next time, game on, Podgoblins.